Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.
Thanks for calling Metal Injection. What's your name? Who is it?
That's Leroy, I think. He said in the chat.
Oh, Leroy. Is it Leroy? Yeah, Leroy, hold on, okay? We're just about to get started.
All right.
Sure. We can hold, whatever you want. Okay, bye.
All right, we're ready to go. Noah, you need to readjust. Could you just move that? Yeah, you're good.
Okay, so just if anyone calls in, they can hear us, just so you guys know. The lines are clear now. Let's
yeah,
get
yeah.
started.
Yeah, I'm ready. All right.
I'll screen Joe when he gets in, and I'll let him know we're on the air. You think that's a good idea?
You got to mute yourself, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we should all mute ourselves for now, no? Rob?
Yeah.
Sure, whatever.
This is your announcer, Chuck Landington, welcoming you to the Metal Injection Livecast. The next UFC event is happening on a remote island. A shady rich guy flying people to an island for his profit and entertainment. What could possibly go wrong? The Metal Injection Livecast starts now.
Yay, we are here. We are on the air. Thank you so much for tuning in for another edition of the Metal Injection Livecast, week three in quarantine.
Four.
I was trying to see.
Week four?
The fourth quarantine.
Four.
Yeah, no.
Oh, my God.
The fourth one in the tank top.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I've lost track of time, and days, and weeks. And,
well,
and I'm going to turn off this light because it's getting a little shine on my head.
Rob, you know, in the post-quarantine world, all time will be tracked by tank top wearing usage.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Week four, because it's the Noah tank top. You can see in my shot, we have Babka down here.
Oh, really?
Aww.
She'll be making an appearance occasionally. And we're moments away from our special guest, Joe Satriani, calling in. If you are listening and want to be a part of the show, you can always dial 213-WIDENUT. And if you're not watching live, we post the archive of our video stream to our Patreon subscribers. Our Patreon is patreon.com/metalinjectionlivecast. For $5 a month, you get access to all the video episodes and access to bonus episodes, at least one bonus episode a month.
All right, focus, Rob.
I can't, it's hard. At least one bonus episode a month. This month's bonus episode that was just posted last week is Santa with Muscles. I was about to say Mr. Nanny. We do a watch-along of the Hulk Hogan movie, Santa with Muscles. And it was painful for us, but hilarious for you. Last month we did a Thor review of the documentary I Am Thor, which is excellent. There's watch-alongs of movies like Uncut Gems and the Motley Crue movie and all bunch of stuff.
And we've got something completely different planned for next month. Trying something new.
Patreon.com/metalinjectionlivecast. That is the website. Hopefully you can subscribe if you need a little more content. But anyway, like I said, we're going to have Joe on. Fourth week of quarantine. I can't believe it's been a whole month now since we've been doing these.
Well, it's almost. It's
been
month. 3 weeks. Cause this
yeah,
is the
3 weeks.
Month.
Right.
Right.
You know
right.
what? I can't believe. I can't believe that last episode, the whole time I looked like I was sleeping and nobody told me. So this time I made it a point to put my laptop higher so that my eyes aren't looking down.
I didn't notice that. Really?
That's just how we assume you look.
Yeah,
I just thought you were bored.
There's a video posted on our social on Instagram, which is Metal Injection Livecast, and in the clip I look like I fell asleep.
Did you?
No, I didn't.
Noah Francesa.
You spilled Diet Coke all over yourself. Bastard.
All I want to say is I don't like Chinese people clipping their nails on a train, okay? That's it. Back after this.
I'm glad that we have Joe Satriani online to hear that joke out of context. let's bring him on the line. Thank you so much, Joe, for your patience and for joining us right now on the Metal Injection Livecast.
Well, it's great to be
Hello,
here.
Joe.
Thanks for having me on. Thank you.
A pleasure. A big star on our show. Welcome. It's an honor.
Oh, thank you. Very good.
Always exciting to speak to a fellow New Yorker. We are all from Brooklyn. We hear you're from Nassau County. That's very exciting for us.
Yeah. Wow.
Do you get a lot of Nassau County excitement, Joe?
You get a lot of fans from Nassau County coming up. But what I want to ask is, what cliche New York food is your favorite? Like, just to get the New Yorkness out of the way, is it pizza, calzone, a nice gyro, an Italian sandwich?
Well, how much time have you got on this show? What's my segment? Because there's a lot of food I like to eat. Every time I go back, which is a lot, we were really big on prosciutto sandwiches, you know, and just mortadella prosciutto and just all those pepperoncinis and going down to Jones Beach, eating those things. And, of course, but, you know, when I was a crazy teenager getting a lot of trouble. At the end of every night, we seemed to be at Frank's Pizza in Westbury, which is right the town where, you know, I grew up, Westbury and Carr Place. Yeah, you get used to that. That pizza is just the best. It just does, it hits all the right spots. So it's a unique thing too, because it's not like what you find anywhere on the Italian peninsula. It's New York pizza is unique.
I agree.
And is that pizza place still there?
Every time I go back, I ask my friends about that. And first they make fun of my California accent because they don't sound like I'm from Long Island anymore. And I can't tell. I don't know what happened. But, I think it closed or it became somebody else's. Oh. You know, I think there's a pizza place still in that small storefront, but maybe it's not Frank anymore. You know, it's somebody else's.
Mm.
That's cool. Well, I also, of course, want to mention you have a brand new album coming out, and it's called Shape Shifting. And I love that there's a variety of different styles of rock that you have going on. Like you did 1980, which is a heavier one, and then the newer single is a little more mellow. And, you know, I feel like the way you see music, most people don't, like, conceptualize it the way you do. So how do you find something new that gets you excited enough to, like, write a new song, or in this case a new album?
You know, it's just life. You know, life is coming at you all the time, never stops, and doesn't seem to be enough time to turn all life experiences into music, but that's what I've always done as long as I can remember. So you know, some albums you walk in the door and you say, I'm going to do a blues album, an electronic record, a metal record, and, you know, this, that, or the other thing, live, super overdub, lots of people, hardly anybody. You know, you've got all these parameters you set up, and they kind of twist the songs and all the material that you've got to fit into this mold. And so a little over a year ago, I just sort of entertained a contrarian thought, and I just thought, well, what if I didn't I didn't walk in the door with this idea that all the songs had to change, but that I was going to change. I was going to let all the songs be whatever they wanted to be, whatever I wrote, whatever style I was happy to, you know, jam on that day, and I just follow it to its conclusion. And then when I go into the studio, I say, well, I'm going to, you know, change. I'm going to shape-shift stylistically, and I'll, along the way, have to teach myself some new ways of playing and recording to make each song its own unique statement. And then once that sort of idea sort of blossomed, I thought I need to write a theme song for myself, you know, basically just to keep me in the mood. And so I wrote the title track, and I thought, okay, this will be like the introduction, so everybody knows that's what's coming on this album. There's going to be, you know, 10 to 13 tracks that are going to it's basically I'm going to take you on an emotional ride, tell a lot of different stories from a lot of different angles of life. And I know I'm always going to sound like Joe, but I actually went out of my way to play as differently as possible on each song.
Yeah, I feel like just of what, you know, what you put out publicly, it comes across, but still very much your signature sound. And another thing that I enjoy is that, like, you're a music teacher and you've been for quite a while. And obviously you have a few famous students in people like Kirk Hammett and Steve Vai. And listening to bands and like rock and metal, specifically metal, this is a metal website. So listening to more modern metal band, is there something that kind of sticks out to you that is maybe lost in modern metal that you wish, you know, somebody would bring back, or some sort of technique or something like that that you kind of want to be like, I wish this was integrated more?
Oh, I don't know. I'm a fan of kids coming on the scene with an attitude and just changing everything. It's just so important. It's funny. I gave up teaching, 35 years ago or something like that. I was just a guy in a band who taught during the day, and I was just a really lucky teacher, you know, had great students. I remember really clearly, though, I'm teaching in this little store in Berkeley, California. I've got my band, The Squares, trying to, you know, get a record deal in the evenings, practicing like crazy, going absolutely nowhere. And I'm a semi-adult, right? I'm in my 20s. But meanwhile, during the day, I'm teaching Alex Skolnick and Larry Lalonde and Kevin Cadogan and David Bryson and Kirk Hammett. And I'm just thinking, like, my God, these kids are going to change the world. Like, I know I'm only in my 20s and I feel old already, because these kids are walking in and they're very respectful, great students, but they have that right attitude, like, whatever anybody over 20 is doing, it sucks, and I'm gonna change the world. And I just thought that is great, because that's the way I felt when I was 14, 15. It's just that I loved Sabbath and Hendrix and Deep Purple, and that's what we played in high school, you know, and we wanted to change the world in our own way. But so I don't think there's anything missing. I'm totally excited about players that that I see putting stuff out there that are playing, you know, 6, 7, 8, and 10 string guitars, and you know, I'll never play like that. It's so amazing to see. It totally blows my mind. And I think they've got that aggression in there, you know, that's an important part of metal music.
Have you ever picked up a 7 or an 8 string and just kind of fiddled with it and decided?
I've had one of Steve's universes for a really long time, and then I think I'm like 15 years ago or something like that. I had Ibanez make me a 7 string version of our JS6. I know that sounds funny because it's called a JS6, but we never went into production with it. But basically, it's mahogany body, no finish, 7 strings, no whammy bar or anything like that. And I think it did, come to think of it. I don't even know anymore. I think I've got one over in the next room just sitting somewhere gathering dust. And every once in a while, I bring it out. And I used it a lot on the album Strange Beautiful Music. But I, you know, to tell you the truth, I'm still struggling with the 6 string. So, you know, it's like every day I just want to get into, you know, practicing and figuring out why can't I play better. It's just I have not changed since I was 14 years old.
That's very inspiring, because here you are, this guitar legend, and you're saying these things like, oh, how can I get better? Because there is no best guitar
no,
player.
There's always you're absolutely right. There's no best. There's so many great guitar players out there in so many styles that, you know, the only thing you can do that makes sense is be inspired by them. But you can't chase them because there's too many different ones, and they're all great. You know, you can't take Philip Sace and say, you know, put him against Tosin Abasi. They're just two totally different, amazing players. And you could spend your life chasing after them. You'll never get there, so you might as well just be yourself, you know.
Another unique player, just really quickly, I wanted to mention that, you know, I was reading the press materials that your label sent over, and there's a mention that there is a appearance by Christopher Guest on the album, who's a famous director, and of course Nigel from Spinal Tap. And then I did a little further digging, and you contributed to a Spinal Tap record and also appeared in one of his movies. So I was wondering, like, what is the friendship and relationship like between you guys?
Oh, I've been so fortunate to know Chris and the guys at Spinal Tap for a really long time. This goes back to mid to late 80s, and I think it was Steve Lukather who was producing a record for them, Break Like the Wind, and that was the title track, and I played on that song along with Jeff Beck and Slash, and that was the first time I met the guys. I just went down to L.A. I live in San Francisco, so it was, like, you know, fly down to L.A. and was hanging out with Steve, who's an amazing musician and one of the funniest people on the planet, and he was a brilliant musician and producing this record for them, and so that's the first time I met these guys. And then I jumped on stage a few times to play either bass or guitar, you know, and we just started up this friendship. And you know, it's amazing, those guys, they are amazing musicians. They're like really interesting, disciplined musicians, as well as being really funny comedians, great actors. And you know, when you walk on stage with them, it's not like you walk on stage with, you know, Steve Vai or John Petrucci, you know, just musicians. You know, these guys have something else going on because they're actors. And when you walk on stage and they've got the wig on and the Spinal Tap outfits and everything, they're like in a movie, and you immediately you realize, oh my God, I'm just a guitarist. I'm not, like, I don't have acting chops, you know. But you know, privately, when the wig is not on, Christopher Guest is like one of the just the nicest guys ever, and he's a great writer, director, and he plays, a lot of people don't know this, but he plays like 2 hours of mandolin a day. He's just very disciplined about his mandolin playing. So I've known this for a while, and every once in a while we've talked about, you know, getting him on a record when I got a little part for him, but I never have enough. And this particular song that ends the album is very uncharacteristic of my catalog, but it just begged for like a real mandolin player, not me kind of faking it, you know, which I can play a melody on one string, maybe on a mandolin or something. But so I just took a chance, you know, I gave him a call. We were recording close to LA in Valencia, California, and I just took a chance that he was in town, and he was, and he liked the song and quickly recorded it at his home studio and sent us two performances, and we wound up using both of them, actually, sort of taking turns across the track. It really added a nice depth to it.
That's cool. We have a caller, and if you want to be ask Joe a question, we have a few more minutes with him. 213-WIDE-NUT is the number. It's 213-943-3688. We have area code 847 on the live.
I think it's Leroy.
Leroy, you're on the air.
Hi.
With Chris Cetrian.
Great. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question in the spirit of being quarantined. If you were quarantined with only 3 to 5 effects pedals, which would they be as specific as possible?
That's a great question. Who am I talking to here?
This is Leroy.
Hey, Leroy, how you doing? That is a very original question. And so I'm just going to turn around. I'm going to look at the floor in my studio here. And, of course, there's a big bad wah, and I couldn't do without that. That just goes with me wherever I go in the world. It's an odd collection of things besides that, though. I've got a Micropog and a TC Electronic Sub and Up. And they're there because I've been, you know, up until a few weeks ago, rehearsing for the upcoming tour, you know, right before we knew for certain that things were going to get postponed. And so I've been just sort of figuring out which octave pedal is best for what song, and I could have 100 different ones like this. I'd just spend forever, you know, trying to figure that one out. I probably a whammy pedal because they're so much fun. You know, you can do so much with those things. They make pretty good chorus pedals and the obvious whammy effect. And they're not bad for octave generation if you don't mind the latency. And if you want to get real guitar nerd-like, it's the latency that I think is really fun. And so, like, if I'm doing a song from the last record, Thunder High in the Mountain, sometimes I don't want to hear that latency so much on one stage, and then I get to another stage, and the latency between, you know, my direct signal and the octave being generated by the pedal is beginning to bother me, you know. So I often will, you know, gig to gig, use the micropog instead of the whammy pedal to generate the octave effect. Drives my tech crazy because he's always thinking I'm making a mistake, but I'm actually just, you know, I'm just like fooling around because I'm just like that latency. But I don't know. The sub and up is pretty cool. It's got a fun latency in the high frequency, which makes it really sound like there's somebody else playing with you. So that's what I like about that particular pedal. What else would I... you know what's a really important pedal is the reamp. John Cunaberdy invented this thing called the reamp many years ago when we were working on the Time Machine album, and we had a DI bass track and a broken microphone in front of a live bass rig, and we had to figure out a way to reamp the bass channel. Believe it or not, there was no pedal or box made to help people out who had to reamp a perfectly good DI track. And he figured it out, and, you know, he got the patent on it and, you know, sold quite a few of those things before he eventually let Radial take over. But I have one of the original ones that he made, and that, I mean, I bring that with me to every session, every recording studio, and I use it here because I do a lot of DI recording. So even though it's not a foot pedal, I got to say it's one of those pedals. And I think that's four, right? So that the last one would be a tuner. You got to stay in tune, right? So, that's kind of boring as a pedal, but maybe as a, if I'm allowed to say sticks, it would be, you know, an octave pedal like Full Tone makes a really great octave pedal, and I've got a couple of them. The original ones, even the new ones, not too bad. Those are really great to play with. They make you sound like Hendrix when you really want to sound like Hendrix, you know, if you're playing Machine Gun or something like that.
Cool, yeah.
Very cool.
Do I get a follow-up?
Thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
Sure, you can get a follow-up.
I mean, did you, was there an overdrive pedal or distortion pedal mentioned? I don't know if I did or...
You know, I don't. I used to, you know, be a slave to my vintage DS1s. You know, I've got about 20 of those things. Unfortunately, they're like an ecological disaster, right? Because you can't throw them away because they've got lead in them. So you just got to keep them sort of not thrown away. However, when we tried to remake it so it was environmentally friendly, we found out that it was the old op amps and transistors and everything that had lead all over them that actually contributed to the sound being so amp-like, you know. And I just thought, you know, this is ridiculous. I got to move forward. And when I met engineer Santiago Alvarez, who was working for Marshall, we, you know, put our heads together to try to come up with a signature Marshall head. So he was the wizard behind designing my JVM head, and that's all I use for distortion. For over 10 years now, starting with the prototypes. And so I don't really carry around with me like a DS1. I don't like overdrive pedals, you know. I know this is like way beyond your show, but the thing that people may not know is an overdrive pedal is a mix of your clean signal and a distorted signal. And to me, and the difference is with a distortion pedal, it's not a mix. It's your signal completely distorted coming out the other end. So my ear hears phasing problems every time I hear somebody use an overdrive pedal, unless they're using it into an amp that's already distorted, which of course creates a snowstorm of hiss that people have to gate out or just keep playing no matter what. And I don't know, it just drove me crazy, and I thought, I'm not going to use that. You know, I'll leave that for the blues purists who just, you know, who are chasing Stevie Ray Vaughan's tone. They can use that overdrive or, you know who my favorite overdrive pedal player is? It's Kirk Hammett. I think he gets a really great sound out of that pedal. And I know he's got it on every solo he's ever done. But I don't hear the pedal working when he's using it. But when everybody else uses it, including me, it drives me crazy. So that's why I didn't mention distortion and overdrive.
Sid, I believe you had a question.
Yeah, I was just wondering how you're dealing with quarantine life in general. You know, are you binging any TV shows, reading any interesting books? What have you been doing?
Yeah, I'm reading a really weird book by William Gibson that I don't even know the title. The problem with the reading with a Kindle is that you don't really see the book every time you open it up. You just see the Kindle. So it's driving me crazy. I've been revisiting Westworld, so I'm just starting to get back into that. I missed last year's season, so I'm sort of jumping into that. And I love science fiction, and my writing partner, Ned Abbott, and I are writing stuff all the time. We've got about 15 to 20 properties right now, and one of these days we'll get one made. We actually, Heavy Metal Magazine actually put out a pilot in what issue was it? Came out in October or something for Crystal Planet. That's the story that we sort of started writing with. So go check that out in Heavy Metal Magazine. Like everybody else, my house smells like cleaning products. It's like if it's not cleaning products, you know, it's the smell of isopropyl alcohol, and it's everywhere. So but here's the strange thing about it is that my life is like either I'm at home, I'm in self-imposed, you know, hermit land working on music, or I'm, you know, ultra public, which is I'm on the road, I'm playing six shows a week, I'm, you know, meeting 1,000 people a day. It took me about a month, you know, to get used to the idea that I wasn't going to be in that ultra public mode, and it's really traumatic, you know, especially when you're practicing 6 hours a day for a tour, and all of a sudden it gets, you know, the plug gets pulled. It's not, you know, it's not a problem, you know, it's just a thing that's happening, you know. The illness is a problem. That's serious. A missed gig or something like that, I'll get over it, you know, so that's no problem. I'm happy to be healthy. My family's healthy. My friends are good. We're all just forced back into our little caves, and we're writing music, and, you know, we're making sure we're ready for when someone says you can go outside again and play. So,
yeah, same here.
But yeah, it's you know, it's difficult. It's you know, like everybody else, you gotta wipe things down, and you gotta be careful that you buy just what you need, so you don't, you know, pull something off the shelf that somebody else really needs when you go to the market. And but this is one of those times I'm really counting on my fellow world citizens to help each other out, you know, because that's we're gonna get over it and we'll get it solved. But I'm not a doctor, so my job is to make music for people. So that's why what I'm doing. That's why we decided to go ahead and release the album, even though it was obviously the worst time to release an album in the middle of a pandemic. But everyone who worked on the record did such a great job, and I know everybody needs music. I need music, so we might as well just release it, and we'll take our lumps in the marketplace, and then there'll be another record. We'll in the future we'll be all together again, rocking out. It'll be fun.
That's right. That's the right attitude to have, I feel. And this will all pass. And the album, of course, is Shapeshifting. It's a nice little distraction from the world. It comes out this Friday, April 10th. And thank you, Joe, so much for your time.
It's been really cool to talk to you guys.
Very cool to talk to you as well. Thank you so much. Have a great night.
Thank you. Stay well, everybody. Bye-bye.
All right. That was Joey Satch. And, you know, he's talking about live shows, and I feel that's something that we discussed last week. And there was a booking agent that just today I wrote about this on Metal Injection, and he posted this whole Twitter thread, essentially telling other promoters and booking agents that if we're being realistic, touring isn't going to start getting back again until 2021 at the earliest. And he says, here's a little excerpt of his little Twitter thread. He says, if tours happen later this year, the turnouts will be cut in half. Capacity of venues will be cut in half or even lower if they're in business. People will still be scared to go out even if social distancing is lifted. This is what we talked about. How many promoters will have funds to back up the loss of any shows? I also see a lot of deals being turned into door deals. How many bands can leave home and play shows for door deals? Just to be clear, there's two different ways you can get paid. You can get just a flat upfront fee for the show, or you can get a deal at the door, which means you just get a cut of every person that comes to the show. And so as each day goes by, it gets scary and scarier how serious this is. My girlfriend works at a hospital. I hear about it every day, all the changes they're making and how she has to hop between hospitals. And he says, this booking agent, who's been a booking agent forever, he's saying, I'm preparing myself to have to start to look for a new job. That's how bad things are. This past weekend, Donald Trump had a conference call with a bunch of sports league commissioners and owners. And what he was telling them, all these people are his buddies, is he's hoping that that these live events will resume in August. Is what Trump like that? And Trump is super optimistic. So if he's saying August, that means like November, you know. But his goal is to get it going before the NFL season, because you know that's the priority right now, not people dying. But I just don't see it happening. What do you guys think so far?
Well, you know, they are now talking about doing baseball games in empty stadiums again as early as May. I don't know if you heard about that. So
I did not.
They're talking about going to some like spring training facilities in Arizona and just having all the teams play within this, you know, 20 mile radius where all the stadiums are, and they all just stay down there.
They're gonna love that. They're gonna love to be just
away from your family for 5 months.
Yeah,
it's gonna work out great.
And also, didn't they try that with basketball and like it still spread the virus to players?
They never even had a chance to try it. They were gonna start it the night after the league ended up getting shut down.
It was on the table.
So what's interesting is in South Korea, they have started playing baseball games in their league, and they're all wearing masks. I saw it on the news last night, which was kind of interesting. But yeah, but live show, like a mass gathering, it's got, like we talked about it last week, unless there's testing. But another thing we talked about last week, this is what I was trying to get to, is like how many people would end up going? And if you remember, we had John Dolmayan on, and he was like, I think it's going to be a lot of people. And we were like, I don't know.
I think it will be a perfect like dichotomy between people who are rushing out the door to go do things again and regain some kind of normalcy, and another group of people who will become agoraphobics and like never leave their house again and feel safe.
Wow.
But I think group A has enough people in it that there will be full stadiums for things like this.
Well, that's an interesting theory. And I actually ran a poll on Metal Injection, and it's obviously not scientific, but what I will say is,
you know who runs scientific polls, Rob? Lamb Goat.
I thought you were going to say Hitler.
Well, what is interesting about this poll is earlier in the day, there were about half as many respondents, but the percentages are virtually unchanged. So I think this is a pretty good idea of what the metal populace feels, because these are obviously metal injection reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked, when would you feel comfortable attending shows? And right now, as I'm looking at this, there is 1,170 people who answered this. And of that, 49% say as soon as the quarantine is lifted.
Mm-hmm.
So just under half are saying, we can go out, I'm going to a show, I don't give a fuck. Then 29% say only once there is a vaccine introduced. So even if the quarantine is lifted in November, like to this booking agent, Daniel DeFonce's point, almost a third of the people that would go to a show aren't going to go to a show just until the vaccine has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Then
I'm in that percentage.
13% say only once rapid testing is available.
Mm-hmm.
And then 6% as soon as venues provide adequate masks and safety precautions, which that's like, to me, that 6% is basically at the, I guess that could really be combined with the quarantine lifted. And then 4% or 3% rather say I'm never comfortable going to a show again.
So pretty, I think that's honest. I think a lot of people, even when there's a vaccine, have now adopted behaviors that that will make them extremely paranoid about ever touching things or being 6 feet away from people. And those will never go away.
Yeah, it's only like a month into this. Just imagine what it's going to be like 6 months from now.
Have bands started doing like virtual concerts? I know like musicians are going online and they'll do like a song a day or whatever. But like, if you can't tour, can you do like every night? Like, we're going to play a full set. Like, once the quarantine is lifted, or at least so you can get with your bandmates and get with the sound crew and have it produced well, but still it's just you like on a soundstage or whatever, where we're going to play a whole set. Here's the set list. It's going to be a different set list every night for X amount of nights. You pay this much to get access to view it live. Have bands, is that a consideration? Is anybody doing that?
Bands are doing one. I can't imagine doing a few days of it, but like Feller Tech, for example, this weekend are doing a show where, yes, you can pay $10 and it's really, you know, you're donating $10 essentially to the band because they're fucking broke. And they will do a full 60-minute show, like a exclusive live stream with a chat and like So bands are doing this. Code Orange did a few weeks ago, but it's nowhere near the same. You know what I mean? And it would only attract a certain amount. It wouldn't replace anywhere near the revenue that a band would make if they're actually actively touring.
That's true, but it's less overhead. They don't have to go anywhere.
They don't need a roadie.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, it's not going to work out. Like, it's
no,
one,
it's not a
it's really a,
it's not a perfect
right. It's at most a one-time thing, because it's like some bands, how many songs do they even have that they could change up their sets so much? You know, you'd have to have a deep enough catalog.
Here's what I think. I think that right now we don't really have an answer because all of this is so sudden and it's such a big change. But I think that musicians are creative. And, you know, like the human will is to survive, and they're going to figure out a way to perform their art and to get listeners involved. And we just don't know what that is yet. But I think it's out there for people to like grab and to do.
Groups of people whose will is to survive, I'm not sure musicians are the number one in that.
No, I'm saying like in the human spirit, like we all have that.
Yeah, so. Speak for yourself.
Another thing I was concerned about and I was thinking about, and I believe last week I said that for me, I would feel comfortable with going to a show if there wasn't a vaccine, but there was rapid testing, by which I mean you would be tested as you're entering the venue.
Mm-hmm.
And now here's the thing. I don't mean like have your temperature taken. Like that's
right.
Not good enough for me.
A literal coronavirus test.
Right. And it would have to be an instant test. I mean, it doesn't have, like, I would hope that it's an instant test. But then as I was thinking about this, I started thinking about the privacy implications like you're turning over your DNA. Like to do it, it is a like a lung disease or what is it? An immune system, an autoimmune. So it's like you have to like breathe or give some form of your DNA to prove that you don't have this virus. So it's like, do I want to give up that kind of privacy?
What do you think, like Madison Square Garden's going to clone you or something? Like, what are you afraid of? What's going to happen? If you want to go to the show, this is what you got to do.
And if James Dolan's in charge of it, they'll probably fuck it up somehow.
That's going to be the next step here. I was just going to be a roster of 13 Robs.
We also learned last week that coronavirus is transferred in fecal matter, so maybe we'll just take poop samples and test them on the spot.
It seems unnecessary, I feel like. You get a cheek swab, you know, you're good. But I'm going to take a dump everywhere into a cup.
Oh, no, just a different type of cheek swab. no, but like for me, the privacy, like I did a 23andMe, so it's like my DNA's out there. But I can just see how people might not feel comfortable with that either. And with the vaccine, it opens up this whole, you know, anti-vax thing and how safe is it and what are the side effects and like there's no good answer just yet. It's scary.
There's also the idiots that won't take it even after it's been declared safe too.
Right.
That's always
Yeah, and it's not like something where the government would mandate. I believe that is unconstitutional for them to mandate that everyone would get the vaccine.
Is it? I don't think it is. I think they do that in public schools. You have to take it or you can't go to school, right?
Right, but right.
If you're an adult.
But what, you have to take it or what? You can't stay in the country?
You know, a mandate really just means if you don't do this thing, there's a penalty for it, right?
So what would the penalty be?
I don't know, because this is an unprecedented situation. But I mean,
well, I'm just saying you're the guy. Like, what would the penalty be?
You go to prison.
You can't leave the house, or I guess it would be illegal. Okay.
You go quarantine somewhere of the government's choosing, so that you can't infect anybody.
Unless
you have a medical emergency that you can't take.
Well, this brings up a link that Noah sent us. Some people are being very, very, very fucking with like going out and on the one hand for me scary, on the other hand hilarious that the most brazen people are religious nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And these people are, no matter what, they're going to church, especially I believe in Florida. You know, they finally instituted this like lockdown. And the church, like some big churches are like, we're still going to be meeting. And obviously, you know, sane people are like, what the fuck are you doing? You're not only putting yourself in danger, you're putting the rest of us in danger.
Right.
Which to me is the scariest part of this virus is that like if a person makes a shitty decision, they're not only affecting themselves, but literally everyone around them.
It's really the viral version of smoking. It's like where you can't. A lot of people always said, you know, it's a terrible habit, blah, blah, blah. But it's the only drug you can do that you go out and you get everyone else sick with your bullshit. So this is kind of the same thing in a way.
This even works because the negative results happen a lot quicker.
Yeah. And also, if someone is smoking, you yourself can choose to, like, walk across the street. You don't know if the person has the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. So anyway, here is CNN interviewing people on their way to fucking church.
Driving out of this Ohio parking lot is a woman who just attended a church service with dozens of other people, including children. Can I ask you about your decision to go to church to be inside that building?
I wouldn't anywhere else.
Aren't you concerned you could have?
I can't get over confidence.
How proud she is.
Anywhere else.
But wait, then why are you leaving? She's leaving too, so clearly there's somewhere else you'd rather be. Liar.
Got a bingo session to go to.
All right.
Yeah, anywhere else.
Aren't you concerned?
She has a book burning session to go to.
Yeah.
Inside.
No.
People who don't go to this.
No.
Church.
I'm covered in Jesus' blood. What
about other people who don't go to this church who you might encounter?
All of these people.
Breaking, this just in. Jesus has COVID-19. Anyone covered in his blood, see a doctor immediately.
Has his blood been tested? Like, do we know Jesus is COVID negative?
We don't.
Like, the fucking nerve of this woman.
Burn that fucking shroud that he wore. Get that shit out of here.
How exactly did she get covered in Jesus' blood?
By
gutted him like a fish.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a Satanist. They didn't say that part. She actually murdered Jesus. She's a Jew from 34 AD. Time traveling here.
I do believe this is a literal thing that, like, they believe that they're all covered in his blood.
Yep.
It's like, I mean,
it's invisible, like COVID-19.
No, let me stop you right there, because if you ask someone who, this is not a joke. I'm not riffing. They believe that the wafer thing is not figuratively, literally Jesus' body, and the wine is literally Jesus' blood, not figuratively. Like, you put the wafer in your mouth. Once you chew it, it becomes Jesus. And you drink the wine, once it's in your mouth, it becomes Jesus.
But then she's not covered in it. It's just inside of her.
Right, well,
she's filled with Jesus' blood.
Yeah.
Jesus breeded her with his blood. That's fucking shit.
I would like to say that the main difference between coronavirus, if you're choosing between coronavirus or Jesus, like which one to follow, to be aware of, coronavirus exists. So that's like the biggest thing for me that makes it more. I should worry about that more than Jesus' wrath, because we know for a fact that coronavirus is a thing in the world.
Well, Jesus could have existed, but I guess we know for a fact that
it's not likely. We don't know for a fact that he didn't, but it's unlikely.
So let's hear the rest of it.
You're concerned you could infect other people if you get sick inside.
No.
People that don't go to this.
No. Church. I'm covered in Jesus' blood. I'm covered in Jesus' blood.
What about other people who don't go to this church who you might encounter?
All of these people go to this church.
No, but you're going to be in places where other people
I go to the grocery store every day. I'm in Walmart, what? Home Depot, all of those
people.
But you
could get them sick.
Yeah, beware, everyone.
She's literally saying, I go every day to all of these places and infect these people.
I never thought I would say this, but I feel like Varg had a point, maybe. The whole church burning thing.
That's a drop.
Sure.
They could get me sick, but they're not because I'm covered in his blood. Thank you very much.
Kathy, I think y'all seeing my point now. Light those fucking matches on fire.
I wonder Varg's opinion. I mean, I don't really, but you know.
I thought you'd never ask, Rubber.
Well, I think Varg would be happy to know that it's disproportionately affecting communities of color.
Oh boy, that's terrific!
Because, you know, they're the ones more likely to be having these service worker jobs that still have to go in.
Happy days are here again. I'm burning churches every day again. Anyway.
Wow,
so
Mark,
Joel, you also
skipping along.
You also sent some church clip here. Is this related?
Oh,
Yeah.
So it's some like
this is the preacher. This is the preacher who was on Inside Edition, who the reporter was like, hey, like, isn't it messed up that you're buying a private plane with your church funds and all this stuff? And he like scolded her. Did you guys see this clip? We can play that clip after, but let's hear this.
COVID-19.
Where's my lighter? Hold on.
What's that, a soul clap?
Oh, my God. He blows at it. He like.
He spits his COVID-19 at it.
The main way to get COVID-19 is through spittle distribution. And him and all these people in this church just.
This song is a fucking banger, bro. Can you play that back again? This motherfucker's spitting.
COVID-19. Sounds like some New York hardcore. It's like a CB Sunday matinee.
The wind of God.
On you.
This motherfucker's spitting.
Forever.
You are destroyed forever.
And you will never be back.
And you'll never be back.
Yeah, because they're all going to get it with antibodies.
Do you ever have the wind of God, Darren?
The wind of God?
Yeah.
No. I've had taco wind before, but not the wind of God.
I had some four-alarm chili this past week and gave me the wind of God afterwards.
It's more like Joseph coming out of your asshole. But... Well, you know.
Just quickly staying on the topic, I thought it was pretty funny. Gene Simmons on the side of sanity. On the side of sanity, actually. He's imploring people to not go out, and I figured because he's such a friend of the show.
He rolled up his tongue and stapled it to the back of his mouth so he doesn't spread.
Like everyone in the KISS Army to go out and stay home and go online and buy KISS merchandise.
They have KISS face masks.
We have KISS PPE. We have all kinds of
KISS ventilators.
KISS ventilators, KISS rations, everything you need in your home to
survive. We have KISS sleep apnea machines for those of you who have trouble snoring. The mask makes you look like you are, in fact, Gene Simmons.
KISS Clorox wipes by the thousands you can buy on our websites. KISS coffin for when your loved ones pass away from the coronavirus, sadly, tragically.
It's probably like a flash sale on their site right now.
Yes, for every sale, I, Gene Simmons of KISS, will personally flash you. as a treat reserved for very few people, but here in these trying times, I'm willing to sacrifice.
It's sad because he can't go out and just flash women at shows. Now he has to have them come to him now.
Challenge accepted.
All right, let's see how this is. What's the burden? The burden ain't much of anything. We should all shut up and get over ourselves. That includes yours truly. Look, not too long ago, our grandparents were asked to go fight a war overseas, a war they had nothing to do with, and 50 million deaths resulted in World War II, and your grandparents gave many times the ultimate sacrifice. While you're busy eating your pizzas and your burgers and all that stuff, there are people who are risking their lives to bring food to you at home. If your house catches fire, the fire department will risk their lives. If somebody breaks into your home.
What is he saying?
That's what these millennials today are. They're obsessed with their pizza and their burgers.
Well, what was the start of that? That's kind of like out of context.
Did he also, can I just say, it sounded like even though he's on the right side of this, he's sort of tacitly undermining the justification of World War II? Did that sound like to anybody else?
That it had nothing to do with us?
Yeah, well, we sent our people over there to die for a cause that they had nothing to do with. How about not getting invaded by like a genocidal madman, like preemptively stopping him and saving the lives of millions of Jews and other people? I thought that would be...
His name is Chaim Witz. I feel like it has something to do with you.
Yes, Chaim Witz here of KISS. No, they would have never got him. They would have never stopped him out. Chaim. Go ahead, Chaim.
Healthcare professionals, what are we complaining about? You get to stay at home and do nothing while people are risking their lives to make your life more comfortable. This will get better. I promise you. Take my word for it, okay?
By the way, he's saying this from... his kitchen, which is almost the size of my apartment.
He's in a KISS robe and slippers.
I'm betting on our scientists. Yes, even the pop.
He's betting on America. Has he seen the stock market lately?
Hasn't it been up the last couple of days?
I mean, yes, but still got a long ways to go to get back to where it was.
As you know, when I was a 5-year-old boy living in Yisrael, it was a viral issue then too. Someone left some bad gefilte out on the windowsill and developed much kind of bacteria that infected all lungs all across the country. Sei gesund, sei gesund, hey. A great shunt across the land.
That's why Paul Stanley sounds the way he does, because of that original virus.
Yes, Paul Stanley, R.I.P. Great, great.
Rest in
peace. Oh, he's not dead yet? Okay, well. Sooner or later.
All right. That's enough of Gene.
By the way, tragically, Ace Frehley has H1N1, I've heard. That is a tragic, tragic thing. We hope he recovers swiftly. Sorry, Robbo. Go ahead, please.
Well, I wanted to mention there was another big-time celebrity
who offered his important opinion
on the level of me
of the coronavirus. His name is Hulk Hogan.
He's also the star of our Patreon episode this month.
Yeah. I was going to say Hulk Hogan in real life is now looking like this without muscles. He posted a photo on Instagram, and it's like a photo of him back in the 90s praying. And there's like a super great photo. And the reaction goes, starts, word up.
You gotta get it. With the plague, God has changed everything you worship. God said, "You want to worship athletes, brother? I will shut down the stadiums, dude. You want to worship musicians, dude? I will shut down the centers, Jack. You want to worship the actors, brother? I'll shut down the theaters. You want to worship money? I'll shut down the economy and collapse the stock market. But you don't want to, you want to go to church and worship me? I will make it so where you can't go to church."
But first of all, they're still going to church, so yeah. They can wipe that one out. Also, the economy is still running.
But also, how about all the things that are good that got shut down too, like schools? What did schools?
You want education?
You want to worship education, brother? You want to teach kids science, dude? I'm gonna get rid of that.
You want to worship hospitals with functional PPE and enough hospital beds? God, take that away from you too, dude.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
So he continues: "If people who are called by my name humble themselves and pray and see my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and forgive their sin and will heal their land." I'm assuming this is a Bible verse. And then here's the thesis. Here's the crux. And get ready to roll the eyes. Maybe we don't need a vaccine. Maybe we need to take this time of isolation from the distractions of the world and have a personal revival where we focus on the only thing in the world that really matters, Jesus.
Oh, because for a second I sounded like a Hasid. I was going to ask, is he like a Chabad Lubavitcher now?
Those are not his payas. That's just the leftover hair.
Just saying, maybe we don't need a virus or a vaccine. You know what I mean?
Go take it, but you know, don't make me take it. That's all I want to say.
Was he always this religious?
Yeah, he's a savior. Eat your vitamins. Yeah, he always was. Yeah. So,
I mean, he didn't really talk about it other than saying, say your prayers. He wasn't like cutting promos about Christ.
He wasn't not doing it. He wasn't an atheist. Well, brother, I want to tell you there's no fucking God, dude.
Right? Don't need the Bible to have a good moral compass, brother.
Pascal's wager is going to go down tonight, dude. Here's SummerSlam, brother.
Oh my God. I have to say, he made me for he plowed Bubba the Love Sponge's wife.
Just pray that he wouldn't shit himself.
Jesus Christ, dude. Just that I don't get other 5 pounds from the chick talk. Just think. At least let me find my dick inside my. Everyone knows, dude. Legally, I am Terry Jean Belay and not Hulk Hogan. And I don't have a 12-inch penis like Hulk Hogan.
You know what? We talk to a lot of people and dumb stories, but I think that still is my favorite thing we've ever touched on this show, is that moment from that dumbass sex tape.
It's got everything. It's got sex. It's got wrestling. It's got Brooklyn style food. It's got a guy that worked at Sirius for Noah.
What doesn't it have?
It's the most livecast story ever.
Yeah.
Just needed Dave Mustaine in the next room, like jerking off or something.
Guys, hold it down. Oh, by the way, the veal parm was not made properly.
Yeah, I was about to say, Nick Menz's mom made that chicken parm.
B minus at best.
I want to, as we wrap up our week's coronavirus coverage, I do want to mention that a Muslim firefighter in New York City has tested positive for coronavirus, claiming he got it after his sneezed into his face, which is just unreal.
Can I say something about this? So I go out for my walks, and I try to go out for 20 minutes a day using extreme safety precautions. Don't go near anybody.
I got a mask.
Yeah, I have my mask. I have my PPE. I have my gloves. No, I don't even have like a high-quality mask. It's like that, but it's just more for my state of mind and for
me. I would argue this is a high-quality mask.
I mean, it's not – all right. It's not a shitty mask, but it's not what the doctors use, okay?
Right.
But I do it just for my own peace of mind and also so I'm not projecting any germs onto anybody.
Right.
But I don't even just stay 6 feet. I stay 20 feet away from anybody. Like I don't touch anything. What scares me more than anything is when I see a Hasidic Jew walking towards me without a mask or gloves on, usually 18 to 25 or younger than that. I run the other fucking direction because they're just germ incubators. Don't believe in this virus within their community. They don't take the necessary precautions, and there's so many like religious Jews around here. It really freaks me the fuck out.
Well, they finally in New York City at least released infections zip code, and the most infections are in all the Hasidic neighborhoods. It's a Hasidic neighborhood and poor neighborhood. It's very, very scary. And like even in this story about this, so this firefighter was essentially walking down the street and this group of Hasidic teens were being fucking dumb trolls. And then they coughed in his, or sneezed, one of them sneezed in his direction apparently.
And that person had coronavirus. We know for a fact he's the one who infected the guy.
That we don't know for a fact.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right. Let me rephrase that. We know the person, the sneezer had it though, right?
No.
No.
The firefighter
he did, but he might have been
the firefighter says that the sneezer told him he had it, but he wasn't tested or anything.
I got you.
But then shortly after that, the firefighter did test positive for coronavirus. So, but there was one passage in here which blew my mind. They talked to a rabbi because communities, you know, they're not taking this seriously, and like there were. Or something that
Jewish community.
The religious nuts. If you're a Christian listening to this somewhere in the U.S. that doesn't have a lot of Jews, think of like the Westboro Baptist Church as that version of Christianity.
I would say there's like a
evangelicals. Can we say that? They're like the evangelicals of Judaism.
Yes, I think evangelical is a more accurate term. By the way, there's send in here the alleged sneeze assault, that phrase just sounds so silly.
It's sneeze assault. What else can you call
it? It really is though. Yeah, you're right. I'm
what's
trying to find
part?
This.
Oh, wait, hold
I'm
on.
Trying to find this part from
it's in our email.
So here, they interview this rabbi, and he noted that throngs of Hasidic Jews gathered in Brooklyn on Wednesday for a rabbi's funeral. What the hell is wrong with these people? Said the rabbi. And he added that Brooklyn funeral homes catering to the Jewish community have been overwhelmed with bodies, which is such a grim sentence for me. It's just dark. It's like, it's not funny. It's just sad. It's so sad.
Well, you know what they're doing now is they're going to use one of the islands in the East River for mass graves, I read today.
I thought Cuomo said that he never, like, that's just the thing that that guy was saying.
Well, it was on the cover of the Daily News that they're planning, they're coming up with a plan to use, it's right next to Rikers Island where the jail is. They're going to use some island. I can't remember which one it was right now.
Like Hart Island or something.
Yeah, I think it's Hart Island.
Which they already do use for, like, anonymous unclaimed bodies, right?
I don't know.
So it's already, I think, a graveyard of sorts.
Frightening. 3,000 bodies.
Our friend Nick, who has been on the show, is an x-ray technician in two hospitals. And the other day he texted me that he went into one of those, like, freezer trucks and that he's just been seeing piles and piles of dead bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's so fun. Like,
well, he probably loves it.
He's a dark guy. He's a very dark guy.
He was also jerking off next to them. I don't know what the hell. <was.
laughs> Took some video.
put it
in the spank bank.
He wanted to see if his cum would freeze it. right when it shot out.
Did it? You get an update?
You know what? You'll have to wait until next week to find out the end of that story.
That's a teaser.
And finally, with the coronavirus updates this week, newborn twins in India were named Corona and COVID. Aww.
They have nothing else to do.
Like,
I mean, the kids or the parents?
The parents.
I mean, no. I guess, I mean, you know, they got in the news. They probably wanted a little spotlight. And there you go.
I hear an ice cream truck outside my building.
Yeah, I also hear an ice cream truck.
Who is that for?
It's 54 degrees out. I don't know.
But we're all under quarantine. Who's, like, going to the ice cream truck?
I saw at least a half dozen ice cream trucks on my run about a week ago when it was, like, 65 degrees that day. They're all out, and they were all doing business, and there was so many – it was, like, a normal day. Like, nothing – it was the first spring day, really, like, weather-wise. So I think everybody just said, fuck it. I'm going out. I'm sick of – it was, like, maybe 10 days into quarantine or something. And they all would just stir crazy, and they all went outside.
I've been going on the nights for days, going on longer walks with Bobka, and I tried to go to Prospect Park on Friday, I want to say, and I had to leave immediately. Prospect Park is the biggest park in Brooklyn. I had to leave because it was so packed that it was just like, what are you people doing? Like, I mean, what the fuck was I doing, right? But
not going in the park where all the people.
Yeah, I didn't stay.
Yeah, and you're one person.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, this is like not. This is sort of a frivolous thing, but I read the other day that Marine Park is the biggest park in Brooklyn. I said, "How is that possible?" But it turns out like they're counting all that marshland.
Yeah, that water. Yeah.
Is that part of the park? I feel like that's the park.
Yeah. I mean, you can, like, walk. There's, like, paths you can walk.
All right. That's too much of an inside tangent, I guess. But that pissed me off. Prospect Park's the biggest park.
Are there trees in Marine Park?
Yeah, there's trees. Huh. A bunch of trees. It's like a mini Prospect Park.
So.
Hey. All right, Rob.
Taking a little drinky. Taking a little drinky. I guess we can move on to the hate mail little situation.
Well, what's the situation?
Well, we got some hate mail. We got some feedback.
Don't say situation. We're in a worldwide plague. You know, it could be anything.
Well, feedback is another pedal that Joe Satriani uses.
That's not the feedback.
I sort of wish we could have gotten Joe back on to review Leroy's song while we have
the
Well, let's send it to him and by email and see what he's between now and next week. We'll have a report on it.
Maybe he could solo over it, add a little track.
And we should keep the My Wife little thing in there, too. act like that's part of the song.
To me, it is.
Yeah. I forgot that that's not really in there. Okay, Rob. Sorry. Hate me. What's the situation?
So we have a voicemail from Phil, which he sent just as the show was going on. Uh-oh.
Robert.
Philip.
Yeah.
No, are you cold? So you're getting a little cold? You got to cover up?
Yeah.
Like Corona. Hi, Joe Satriani. Hi, Joe. It's Phil from the UK. Coming up with a new album. And obviously, looking forward to the tour next year. And just to say, in this strange, crazy time, wanted to let you know that we were lucky enough to have a baby boy, and he's named after three of the kindest and most influential people in our lives. His two middle names, Peter, after his late granddad, and Michael, after his other late granddad, and his first name is Joseph, after
wow.
a guy who's... amazing musician, and who has provided the soundtrack to so many of the amazing moments of our lives. And I just thought that might be a bit of good cheer at this time. Anyway, hope you're all well.
Joe Satriani got top billing over their two grandfathers.
I'm glad we could play that for Joe. Well, he was on with us.
Well, he sent it during the show, though. Yeah. We had no way of knowing.
I feel bad. Rob, could you like email that to Joe or something? So I feel bad
sure,
that
yeah.
having that fall on deaf ears.
Just for you, Sid.
I was afraid the other two influential people were gonna be someone terrible, like Varg or something. Joe Satriani, I just wanna say that I love you. I also love Varg, and I love burning churches down. Isn't that great? Don't send that to Joe if we get one of those.
Wow.
Name my son Adolf.
Joe Adolf Pol Pot Smith.
Mao Zedong.
Joe Adolf Pol Pot Ken Pierce. Oh my God, Noah went out of camera. That's how hard she's cracking.
I just like the way you said piss.
Piss. It's the
piss.
That's the British way, Noah. Piss. Sounds like piss in English. I'm just taking the piss out of him.
Okay.
So we have an email from Rob in the UK.
Hello, Rob.
Oh, a lot of UK feedback.
Well, Rob is a longtime fan of the show. He's sent in stuff before. And you can send in your questions, comments, feedback, and criticism by emailing hatemail@metalinjection.net. And Rob says, are you going to talk about wrestling being weird as fuck without an audience?
Mm-hmm. Little gaff.
He asks, should it continue or take a COVID break?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because there was just an episode of Squared Circle Pit release that I guested on, and we discussed this.
Yes.
A lot of fun.
Darren and I did a WrestleMania recap yesterday, and, you know, you can download it in the same RSS feed as you get the live cast. And for our Patreon subscribers to Metal Injection live cast, you can see a video version of that on the Patreon page that we posted yesterday at patreon.com/metalinjectionlivecast. And wrestling is indeed weird as fuck without an audience. And personally, at this point, like, it's just kind of getting hard to watch, and I'd much rather they just take a break. What do you
agree?
Think,
well, I really, my biggest thing is, you know, it's not for me. I could see why people enjoy it. But it, like, every time I watch the empty arena thing, it's supposed to be an entertainment, like a break from reality, the grim reality that we're living in. But you just see this empty arena, and it just reminds you of why they're doing this, because they're not allowed to have people in there. So it's that. It's keeping the wrestlers away from their families and stuff. And it's, you know, they're not forced, but they kind of are forced because of, you know, like unspoken pressure that I'm sure there'll be repercussions if they don't do this. And then, like, beyond that, you just – taking away from all the great moments that happened, like they just had WrestleMania. So there's title changes and like iconic moments that are supposed to be in front of a crowd. And you have this guy like posing in his like great moment of glory and stuff. And it's for nothing. It's for a show that is going to be completely inconsequential.
And, you know, people might remember it because it was WrestleMania, but there's just there's no grandeur to it. So I would rather they didn't do it. Week to week, maybe. I don't feel like they should have done WrestleMania. I think they should have waited.
Sid and Noah, do you have an opinion?
What if they green screened an audience?
Well, you know what they were talking about doing is, like, during WrestleMania, putting pictures of people, like, streaming themselves, like them watching on Skype.
Like a Zoom chat.
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest. Like, the WWE has so much money, they could buy, like, a laptop for every seat and just have each one be a Zoom.
But then how?
No,
you
no
have to
on,
do it
on
the way.
Call me.
It's not, to be clear, it would be like 10 people on the screen that viewers at home would see, like bordering the video. Mm-hmm. So it would be on the edges of the screen, like down, like it would be like, there would be like four people here, four people
no,
here.
No, in the arena. Just keep the laptop.
Right. That's a different idea.
Yeah.
I like your idea.
It's a better idea.
Yeah, it's closer to the live experience.
Yeah.
I honestly would have been okay with it if they just played fake crowd noise. Like, that wouldn't have bothered me at all. I feel like that would have enhanced the situation.
I don't know.
It's just like a laugh track.
Yeah. Ultimately, to me, it just exposes how much the audience is important to the wrestling show, which I truly didn't realize truly how important they were until this happened.
But listen, they're willing to do two matches, quote unquote matches, that are completely cinematic, that were just basically skits and movies, but they're not willing to put a laugh track in. Like, that's over the line. Like, you had this guy, you had the Funhouse match, which was just complete departure from any pretense that it's a wrestling show anymore. So why can't they just play crowds?
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you. Yeah, I mean, try anything at this point.
I also think about, like, those, like, hardcore wrestling fans, like that guy that's, like, at every show, and how, like, heartbroken he must have been. You know, like the fans that don't miss a WrestleMania, you know.
Poor I mean, man. They could be even more heartbroken if their grandma or their grandpa died. But yes, I get what you're saying.
This guy that has enough money to travel around the world and go to every single wrestling show can't go to them anymore. Poor guy.
Like, Rob, I think you raised an interesting point with, like, now we're realizing how important the fans are to the product. So do you think the fans should be like, wait a minute, you guys need us more than we need you. Stop charging us to, you know, admission.
Yeah.
We're part of the product.
A wrestling fan general strike.
Pay us a salary, motherfucker.
Yeah. You're right.
Well, they're going to keep doing these empty arena shows without us, motherfucker.
They
might wind up doing that anyway, because people are watching these shows less and less. They may not come back when this is over.
Yeah, I've thought about that as well. But really, like, you know, we talked about it earlier, though. I think if they do open up arenas, I don't think immediately it'll be just full thing. It's going to be scattered seats, I feel, you know, like it's not going to look the same at all.
I see certainly that as a possibility, but part of me just thinks, you know, there will be a lot of people who don't go to these shows for sure.
Yeah.
But there will be 15,000 people who will go, and they will fill it.
In my head, all the arenas are going to look like the first three innings of a Dodgers game. Like, one person every five seats.
I just think from the pool of millions of people in these cities where they do shows, there will be enough people. Maybe not WWE, because they already weren't selling out to begin with.
No, but I mean, you just metal shows.
Oh, metal shows? Yeah.
Any show.
Baseball games. I think there will be enough people from that group, from that subset of the population, who will go to things, and there will be enough to fill these arenas, in my opinion.
All right, moving along, we have another piece of hate mail from Juan. He says, hey, guys, Juan again.
Goodbye.
I know it's probably been more than a month since I first sent an email asking about the tips on starting a podcast. Do you guys remember that? We all gave him some tips. Mm-hmm. And then he says, but I work in a lab and I've been super busy, so I couldn't get a chance to respond. I guess as far as making this podcast goes, it might be a while until I have free time again just due to this damn virus. But hopefully when this all clears, I can do a short episode and send it to you guys to thrash or trash. As far as my Kuma's Fest comment I mentioned, which he said he hoped we would go down there for Kuma's Fest. He says, I don't know if they're still doing it. They're not. Because of the virus. But even then, I doubt you guys would want to stay in a one-bedroom apartment. Oh, I guess we said we would stay in his apartment. Right. Is it, I doubt you guys want to stay.
Was that a binding agreement?
Well, no, because he was like, why don't you come to Kuma's, to Kuma's Fest? And we're like, where are we going to stay? Your apartment? Your apartment?
Aww.
And then he offered it.
He says, I doubt you guys would want to stay in my one-bedroom apartment. Maybe my podcast is running by the time of the fest. I could review it on my show. Well, stay safe, guys, and stay inside. Thanks, Juan, and good luck with your diagnostics job. Hopefully you're crushing this virus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you for working, Juan.
Excellent.
For those who cannot see Rob right now, he's doing a crush motion with his hands.
He's mean mugging.
He looked like Baron von Raschke with hair.
I do believe that is this for the hate mail. Let me just double check.
Okay.
But yeah, you can, of course, email hatemail@metalinjection.net if you would like to be a part of the show and have us, ask a question on the air. Another way you can be a part of the show is to be the top live cast fan of the week. And to do that, all we ask is that you contribute $10 to our Patreon at patreon.com/metalinjectionlivecast. And in addition, a bonus episode every month that you would get as a $5 patron, as well as all access to all video episodes of our quarantined editions of the show. You will also get a shout out at the very end of the show, which is right now.
Our weekly shout outs. We have Eric, Rob Ganoush, a.k.a. Justin, Benjamin, El Deuterino, Cynical Sid, Cynic Cynicism, Dan R., Cattle Decaf, Mindy Mayer's Keeper, a little Jewish hat that they wear while they're spreading coronavirus, Mindy Clock Destroyer, Sam I Am I Is, Justin with an E, Jander, Chris Chavez, and LaCroix with a T at the end.
All right. Well, thank you to all of you for helping us out. And all that money goes into making the show better, getting us some gear upgrades and paying for server costs and all that good stuff. So thank you so much.
Oh, God.
Thank you.
And
No, I bought a few blankets. They're clean. I got them for $24. They're not infected with any bacteria or anything whatsoever. When I bought Manhattan Island. No? No? Don't get this dark reference?
On that note, got to leave. Say goodbye for now. We'll see you next week. Let's dance, folks. Won't be long till I see you guys again. Because I know what I'm doing best. And I know what's going on around here. Cause I know what I'm doing best.
This song is so stupid.
And I know what's going on. Got to leave. Got to say goodbye.
No, when the music stops, she starts doing a bunch of other things.
Oh my God.
All right.
That was fun.
We're off?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we're off.